Hi, I'm Theodoric Meyer, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. When Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Act in 2010, it was supposed to beef up financial regulation in the wake of the financial crisis. But Congress didn't write the actual rules and regulations themselves. That task falls to government agencies like the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And when the Washington Monthly's Haley Sweetland Edwards investigated how that rulemaking was going, she found that the financial institutions the law was supposed to regulate had their fingers in every step of the process, exerting pressure to weaken rules or suing to kill them outright. She describes the whole process as the seventh circle of bureaucratic hell. With Muckreads, we like to highlight great investigative reporting. I called Haley to find out how she got inside the arcane world of rulemaking. Here's what she said.
Well, it was an assignment, actually, from our editor-in-chief, Paul Glastress, over here at the Washington Monthly, and that was exactly my reaction. He walked into my office and said, you know what really we need to write about is the regulatory apparatus and specifically financial reform, and I thought, you have got to be kidding me. How does anyone write about that and make it seem at all interesting? And after just digging into the story for the first couple weeks, it just became apparent that it is absolutely enormously important. And after that, the importance of the story really kind of wrote itself.
How did you go about reporting it out then? Where did you start?
I actually started at the beginning of the regulatory process. I'm trying to remember. I got on the phone with a couple lawyers who work for these agencies and just asked them, basically, what's the step-by-step process? What happens or what happens to a law after it's passed? And I started getting a sense of where these rules became vulnerable, where rulemakers had to make tough decisions and things like that. And it works differently with the independent regulatory agencies than it does with the federal branch agencies like the EPA and the FDA, which we're a little bit more familiar with. As soon as I realized that there was this whole world and this, it just became clear that it was a gauntlet, which is how I ended up writing the piece. I kept imagining these rules having to run this extraordinarily dangerous gauntlet that begins the moment a law is passed and ends, sometime after enforcement, actually, which I don't get into in the piece at all.
Can you point to a specific point at which, when it went from being very dull for you to realizing that it was very interesting?
It was really looking at these rules themselves and realizing it was really something that one of these people at the CFTC said to me. He spoke to me off the record because he's still a rulemaker now, but he said, a law doesn't mean anything until it's written into rules. It's just words on paper. And suddenly it clicked for me that we pass these enormous pieces of legislation and all of us pay such close attention to these laws as they're making their way through the partisan battles in the two houses of Congress, and they're covered every night on the daily news. But they're laws. They're stamped into the federal code, and that doesn't mean anything until they're written into rules. And then I just became fascinated because I realized that so many of these rules coming out of Dodd-Frank in particular, but out of so many laws, just get weakened enormously, and laws that we thought we had just essentially don't exist. They may be on the books, but they don't actually change your life or mine.
You wrote in the piece that some rules had been, quote-unquote, spectacularly hacked to death. Can you give us an example of a rule that sort of met that fate?
Gosh, well, one rule that I write about in here is the proxy access rule. And that was just killed entirely, actually. It was hacked to death, I guess that's correct. It's a bit gruesome, it sounds, in the retelling. And that rule would have made it possible for shareholders to, it would have made it easier for them to vote on the makeup of a corporate board, which, among other things, that's one of the ways that shareholders can put the brakes on just crazy CEO pay. So shareholders themselves can hold that down a little bit with their votes. So it's a very sort of widely accepted that this is a good idea. Among many, many consumer groups, the SEC advanced this rule. It wasn't the first time they tried to do so. and they got it all the way out. They finalized it, and if you read the piece, it's actually you'll realize that actually finalizing a rule takes the better part of a year, or sometimes 2 years, depending on the complexity of the rule. So that's no small feat in of itself. But they worked this hard, they produced this rule, finalize it, and it is overturned in the court. It was overturned in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit in a very famous case called Business Roundtable versus SEC. And that was just something that should, by it should, according to the law, be the law of the land right now, but it's not because of this court case. So that's and basically no one paid attention to that. It was I say the case is famous, but it's very famous among maybe a very small cadre of policy wonks and people who spent their winters reading about the regulatory apparatus like I did.
And what is that one specific rule? What does that mean for the public then, not having that rule in place?
The proxy access rule is basically means that shareholders have very little say on what happens in on corporate boards. And that may seem like a very small piece of the pie if we're talking about the Dodd-Frank law in general, you know, deals with the entire economic financial sphere. So this is just a really tiny drop in that ocean. But the fact that shareholders don't have, you know, equal say on the makeup of corporate boards actually has, you know, some profound implications down the line for how these corporations are run. And out of Dodd-Frank alone, there are about 400 rules. So each of those drops, each of these tiny little rules, if they're killed in the courts or they're killed in any number of other ways, amount to basically a law that has been kneecapped or, as I said before, spectacularly hacked to death.
You mentioned quoting an official anonymously. Was it difficult to get people to talk for this story, and was it difficult to really get inside what was going on?
Yes, it has its challenges. I spoke to a lot of administrative lawyers. I spoke to a lot of people around the apparatus itself, and it took me a while to actually speak to some rulemakers themselves. And people who work for these agencies don't really have a lot to gain by having their name public in any way. So I spoke to a lot of them. I spoke to about half a dozen, actually, off the record, around the city, just in coffee shops and in their offices, and really just laying down exactly how it works, exactly the ways that people are influenced, exactly what it looks like in these conference rooms, and how they type up the rules, and who actually gets to say. So I really did get a wonderful insight into how it happens on a human level inside the agencies. But you have to think about what these people have to gain. You know, they don't, they really just will be pilloried by their colleagues for saying anything negative about the agency, and they're not, you don't become a rulemaker, you don't become a bureaucrat for the glory or to see your name in paper. So there's a lot of reticence there. I did speak with one rulemaker at the SEC on the record. His name was Hunter Jones, and he didn't actually end up making it into the piece, but had been at the agency for, I think, 20 years, and was just very well-spoken and very intelligent, and I think was one of the, he was willing to speak on the record along with the communications officer at the SEC, so both were present at the same time, but you did get a sense of, in talking to these people, not only him on the record in the presence of a communications officer, which of course will give you a certain perspective on an agency, but also just speaking to all of these people, you get the sense that these rulemakers are not these, I don't know, but the Republicans tend to portray them as gray-faced bureaucrats sort of sitting in their cubicles, and Democrats tend to portray them as the same. It's just kind of they're maligned on all sides, when really these are often very highly educated, very technologically savvy and passionate people who got into doing this work because they thought that they could do some good. Of course, that's not everybody, and the revolving door is a real issue, but I think that was one of the eye-openers for me in reporting the piece.
You mentioned in the story the U.S. Chamber of Commerce putting up these big purple and orange posters in Union Station, which many SEC officials walk through every day on their way to work, the posters that sort of encourage them not to regulate the financial industry. Does that put more of a, I don't want to say a human face, but does that humanize these rule makers a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a huge take-home message, I hope, from my story, that that these are real people. They're real people sitting around real tables a few blocks from our offices in DuPont Circle. It's in D.C. I mean, the SEC is over by Union Station, but it's actual people who are sitting there, and they are sifting through these reports, 9 out of 10 of which were produced by industry, by the financial industry, and the experts that are cited are bought and paid for by the financial industry. And you have these rulemakers there. Many of them are lawyers. Many of them are economists by training. Many of them have PhDs and have, as I said before, just an enormous amount of technical expertise in their fields. And they're sitting there just trying to figure out how best to regulate an extremely complex industry, given a bunch of information that is produced by the industry they're trying to regulate. In some ways, it's just this sort of impossible Sisyphean task. On that level, it's almost amazing that as many rules have emerged from the Dodd-Frank law that do have all their teeth and are relatively powerful and have a chance to do some good, to actually rein in some of the excesses of the financial industry right now.
You mentioned in your piece sort of three stages at which the law can be maimed or rendered ineffective through this rulemaking process. Can you run us through each of those briefly?
Sure. Yeah. The first one, I think I call it the asymmetric warfare in rulemaking, and that gets to what I was just talking about, where you have these rulemakers who are sitting around a table and sitting at their computers trying to figure out how best to write a rule or regulation to rein in this case, the financial industry, while at the same time not ruining the economy. Their entire purpose is to protect consumers, while no one, of course, wants to do any harm to the economy. So they have this kind of, or do any harm to anyone, really. So they have to walk this line, and they're just faced with an overwhelming amount of information, overwhelming amount of reports that are all created by industry, paid for by industry, lobbyists and trade groups and bought and paid for think tanks and actual representatives from Wall Street itself, the Lloyd Blankfeins of the world, flew down repeatedly down to D.C. to actually meet with these rulemakers and their bosses. So all they're hearing on a daily basis is the industry perspective. So that is in one way that encapsulates the major part of stage one in the gauntlet, the asymmetry of information. Stage two is, I alluded to before, the courts. It's cost-benefit analysis in a conservative court. And I mentioned the SEC rule on proxy access that was overturned in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, excuse me, and that it's a very, very conservative court, and they have really done a number on a lot of rules. That they've overturned 3 Dodd-Frank rules. They often use these little turns of phrases or take apart the minutiae of the language of the law in order to overturn it, or they use cost-benefit analysis, which opens up a whole other can of worms, but essentially you weigh the benefits of a rule against the cost of that rule, and you decide whether or not it's worth it to implement that rule. But you have to ask yourself, cost to whom and benefits to whom? So a lot of reformers in this world will say, or in the regulatory world, will say that implementing these rules may have a minor cost on industry, on the financial industry, but it will have the benefit of preventing another financial crisis or something like that. So you end up weighing these very different things. And then stage three of the gauntlet is Congress itself, which goes back and weakens a law after it has already been passed. And it can do that in a number of ways. One is through technical amendments to the law. Another is by undercutting the agency's funding, forcing them to reduce staff, things like that.
There are sort of tremendous numbers of reporters covering Washington, but you write that very few of them are writing about these arcane battles over rulemaking. Why is that, do you think?
Well, this is a discussion I got into with our editor-in-chief, too, actually, but I think one part of it is the slow collapse of journalism, where I know that's such a lame excuse in the journalism world right now, but it used to be that people would be assigned agencies. Reporters would cover an agency as a beat, and lots of reporters. There would be someone from the Des Moines Register or something would be out there sitting in the USDA headquarters and writing about what they were doing and writing about the rules that were making their way through the system. And as we've seen regional newspapers collapse, we've seen that kind of representation also wane. So that's a major part of it, I think. And another major part of it is that a lot of these rules are, a lot of this process is very slow and very boring. It doesn't have the same, in a strange way, it doesn't have, it's just as important as the legislative process, but it lacks some of the sexiness of it. You know, you don't have these senators up there yelling at each other and getting into these partisan battles. It all goes on behind the scenes, but has the same effect, which is whether or not our economy is or our financial industry is actually regulated.
And you see new outlets like, or relatively new outlets like Politico springing up, but they don't really cover this sort of action so much, do they?
They don't, no. It's not, it doesn't really fall too much in Politico's purview, and they could. I think they should. But it's a problem that I hesitate to sort of criticize my fellow reporters, too, because I know that so many of them are just dramatically overworked and underpaid, and they're required to write 12 blog posts a day in addition to covering a beat that is much larger than their predecessors' beats. But I, at the same time, I do think it's incredibly important that once you sort of make that discovery that a law does not mean anything even after it's been passed, if it doesn't make it through this rulemaking process, if you can make that argument, which you can and which is true, then we really, really should be paying much more attention to this process.
One of the things that struck me the most about your story was how good and how punchy the writing was, especially for something that is not easy to make clear or exciting for readers. Is that something that you kind of tried to keep in your mind as you were writing it?
Oh, well, thank you so much for saying that. I certainly hope that's true. I think that one thing that helped me, at least in this, is this is not a subject that I knew a lot about before I started reporting the story. It was not, in fact, something I knew basically anything about. I gave myself a crash course in administrative law. I literally borrowed a freshman or a first year of law school book called The Principles of Administrative Law and read the whole thing, just trying to figure out what the heck was going on. And as a result, I was had a very deep understanding of where most of our readers were coming from, which is we don't have a lot of fluency in this particular area of the government. And I just tried to write to myself 2 months before I started reporting this.
Got you. Well, I'm sure your readers are grateful that they don't have to pick up a copy of Administrative Law for first years.
Yes. I know, it's sitting here on my desk still. I really should banish it to the other room. It was painful.
What kind of response have you gotten since your story was published?
It's been really positive. It's been, yeah, really, really positive, which is great. MSNBC, the Chris Hayes Show, just did a whole segment on the topic, which is wonderful, taking apart how important this is and bringing it hopefully to just more of the population. As I write the end of this piece, the more people we have paying attention to the rulemaking process, the less likely it is that these rules can be spectacularly hacked to death during the rulemaking process. So that's been great and satisfying to see it get some legs.
Well, we'll certainly keep following that here at ProPublica. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
And thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Haley Edwards of The Washington Monthly. You can read her story at washingtonmonthly.com. Be sure to check out MuckReads, our daily collection of the best investigative reporting, at propublica.org/muckreads. And if you read a story that you think deserves to be included, tweet it at us with the hashtag MuckReads. For ProPublica, I'm Theodoric Meyer. Thanks for listening.